How do you feel about the fact that they're still getting a salary? And are their red lines still the same? So when Sinn Féin say about getting into talks and the DUP saying, well, they were ready months ago, have they moved any? Or when Sinn Féin goes into those talks, is it still a red line that they want gay marriage? Is it still a red line that they're not going to accept Arlene Foster into the office of First and Deputy First Minister? They will not go into government. Have they budged on that at all? Has the DUP budged on Arlene Foster as their nominated candidate? Or are they prepared to manoeuvre? Why should they, some would say? How can Sinn Féin start dictating who the nominated character should be? It doesn't sound like there's any manoeuvring to do this morning. They're back fighting at each other today, but you're still paying their salaries. Don't forget about that. And meanwhile, on this programme, you heard last week, 7 months to take £70 million out of the health budget. That's real lives, real pain, real distress for children, for elderly people as well. Steve Aiken from the Ulster Unionist Party.
Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Good morning to you. What is the solution to this?
Well, the solution's obvious. As far as both the DUP and Sinn Féin need to stop sniping at each other and get on with it. And let's get the Assembly back up and running, get the Executive running. I mean, this business about the 70 million cuts in healthcare, the other cuts that are going across the various departments and what's going on, and the fact that there's no local input into what's happening. I mean, for one, I was one of the people who thought when the DUP came back with their 1.5 billion from Theresa May, I thought that some of that money could already be started to be fed through both to education and health, because we do need to reform health and get going with that. But I'm looking at the figures now and thinking none of that money's been allocated. And we're not even going to be able to do this in this financial year. And I'm really concerned that this two-year deal of the sort of that Theresa May and the DUP had, none of this money is going to be able to be spent within the two-year period.
Brokenshire can spend it. Brokenshire can decide to dole out the money if he wants to.
Has he done so? No, there hasn't been any movement on it. But let's put it this way. If you want to, you know, one of our biggest problems is the York Street Interchange. We need to get moving with the York Street Interchange because we've got a real infrastructure problem in Northern Ireland. How long do you think it's going to take to get the contracts let through? How long do you think it's going to start getting the money flowing? And how long is it going to do before we get the project started? I've got real concerns that despite this extra money that's supposedly coming to Northern Ireland, we're not going to be able to get on with it and use it. And particularly if we don't have a devolved administration here pushing for this. And you know as well as I do, Stephen, the issues in health, the issues in education, and the entire tsunami of issues surrounding Brexit. We need to get local voices there to get that sorted out.
The DUP don't want to come on and talk to any of you this morning.
Oh, right.
On the programme. They are saying that Sinn Féin is holding Northern Ireland to ransom for a political wish list. So whose side are you on? Tell me why. 0808 509 693. Sorry, that is Five Lives number. 030 30 80 55 55. John in North Belfast. I'm double jobbing too much. Morning, John.
So you are, Stephen. You should get a job as an MLA. Stephen, it's just shameful and disgusting that they're going to go now for another few months just to find their wage. The last time there was anything up at Stormont was welfare reform, and they handed it back to the British government because they couldn't make their mind up. It's about time the British government stepped in again and straight to direct rule.
But where do you think there's a squeeze on these parties to get a settlement? To get a deal? Do you think Brokenshire, James Brokenshire, our Secretary of State? So don't look upon him as some type of distant character. He is our Secretary of State. He's the Northern Ireland Secretary of State.
Stephen,
do you think he's
Brexit,
being effective?
Stephen, I think Brexit has took over all that, and there's no space for our MLAs, and direct rule is the only thing that can save Northern Ireland health. Education, you name it, it's all a mess. Those people are waiting compensation for months and months now, and some of them are dying. They're still waiting for their compensation. It's just disgusting that these people are going to try and justify their wage for another 6 to 7 months. It's pretend to pull the plug on the hill and reformed it.
Eamon and Portadown. Thank you, John. Morning, Eamon.
Morning, Stephen. I more or less agree with that last caller there. Wages should stop straight away. Direct rail, and then have the same things as England has, whatever their laws are, have them over here as well and see who wants to move them.
Well, that would be gay marriage here straight away. You could see water rates here. Well, so what? You've got the largest party in Northern Ireland, the DUP, against it. That's so what?
Oh, but they're only one party. You count the rest of the party, there's a majority for it.
You know, there are real issues here.
Yes, real issues.
There are real issues. I've told you all last week what is happening with the health service. My goodness, the chief executives are having their extraordinary meetings, as they're calling them, on Thursday, right around the country, to tell the public where they're taking $70 million out of the health service. John Compton, former head of the Health and Social Care Board, was telling us on this programme last week, Eamon, that that'll probably mean beds being closed. It'll probably mean elderly people getting fewer hours for their care packages. That's new elderly people who need care for the first time. All of this is going to have a real effect.
That's right, yes. You should, with direct rule, then you should cover all that. Put a minister in direct rule and put any budget and thing in order, direct rule, and see what happens.
Stephen, can I say, the other thing with direct rule, and your first caller, John, made mention of it there as well, the huge one to bear in mind there is welfare reform. I mean, the whole Tory austerity programme was based around a lot of welfare reform and a lot of cuts within our welfare system. Now, here, by having an assembly up and running, we were able to mitigate a bit against the full impact of those being felt for people here in Northern Ireland, certainly for until 2020 anyway. But if we go into a period of direct rule, then what you have is the Tory austerity programme will be rolled out in full. And here in Northern Ireland, we're only beginning to feel the impact of welfare reform. So if we go into a period of direct rule, be in no doubt that that will be so much worse.
Claire.
And it will be so much worse for the most vulnerable and the most at risk financially in Northern Ireland.
Claire Hannah's with us this morning as well. So we have the Green Party, we have the Ulster Unionist Party, we have the SDLP and the Ulster Union, and the Alliance Party coming on as well. Claire, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So think about this, Claire. No budget, e-bike legislation. We can't even put push bikes, for goodness sake, into Northern Ireland and update the licensing laws. Bingoa proposals on hold. $70 million, as I've mentioned, coming out of the health service in 7 months, no united voice during Brexit negotiations. What on earth is this country going to look like in 12 months' time?
Well, I don't disagree with any of that. It's literally ridiculous, and the world is keeping on turning, and things like Brexit are still happening. But just to your callers have mentioned direct rule like it's some sort of, you know, silver bullet. It's not. A very, very best case scenario, if you want to be generous to them, you can say that London are preoccupied with Brexit, but they're making a pig's ear of Brexit. And I don't particularly want those same people to pick up all of these decisions. But it's not just a case of, you know, each individual decision. And you've mentioned some of them, the likes of the delay around bowel cancer screening. But the fact is, if we don't have local institutions, we don't have a Good Friday Agreement. You know, are we prepared to throw all that away? Never mind the day-to-day damage to decision-making.
What can people do about this?
Well, hopefully, I guess, until the DUP and Sinn Féin find it in themselves to sit down and to do it properly. And it's disappointing that after the summer, you know, they're both back at the blame game and the sniping. And part of you know, the run-up to the Good Friday Agreement and since is a little bit that people did have to stretch themselves and sort of help their opposite numbers to get off hooks that they'd got themselves onto sometimes. And we have solved much bigger problems. But we know that if you're looking, and I very much want the DUP, and they need to get out of the way of things like gay marriage and an Irish Language Act. But we know that if we're trying to make them have some sort of sackcloth and ashes moment where they renounce their political views, it's not going to happen. And we're going to be waiting a very long time. So we have put forward proposals that would reform the petition of concern and that would take that power of veto away from the DUP and could allow this to proceed. And we could get in, and again, the Good Friday Agreement was about trust building up between, you know, former enemies by working together on everyday issues. We didn't see that happening in any major way, but it still can happen if people get in and make those collective decisions for all of us.
Jim in West Belfast. Morning, Jim.
How you doing, Stephen? I just there's 2 points I want to make. The first one being, and I keep making the same old point whenever I'm talking to you, this place is an absolute joke. We're 20 years on from a Good Friday Agreement, and we're no further on if you sort of put it in a chronological stage. The DUP are not as willing to go into an assembly, although an executive, although they probably disagree about there, because they are kingmakers in a Tory government. So the Tories have to sort of tread the boards very carefully with the DUP. And my second point is, if ever our politicians had incentive to get back into an assembly and executive, it's the historical inquiries, abuse findings, mm-hmm. and those poor individuals who, through the whole trauma of giving evidence, were promised that compensation would be paid. The money is there, and then you had Billy McConville, who died and buried about a month ago, and you had your colleague Ada Duncan done a fabulous report last week on a man who is waiting compensation, but he actually regrets walking into the courthouse in Banbridge. Brokenshire has said the money is there to pay these people out, but he will not sign it off because it's down to an executive. We should hang our heads in shame. Stormont should hang his head in shame. These people have suffered enough, and if ever there was an incentive to put your differences to the side and try and make an effort to get together, it's those people who have suffered at the hands.
Do you think they really care enough at the moment, Jim? Do you think they really are worried about the pain and suffering that their constituents will suffer? Because that's where we are at.
I don't think, to be honest, I think they care more about their inter-party politics than they do about the bread and butter issues that are going on in Northern Ireland this morning.
Well, you say inter-party politics, but Jim, they've got to hold dear what they stand for as political parties and their values.
Hold on,
and what they got elected on.
And I understand that. I understand that 100%. But it's just not about what the parties. There's hospital waiting lists. There's people down. There's people waiting 18 months to get seen for tests. There's people who can't afford to heat their house. People who can't afford to eat. It's bigger. I understand they have to stand for their party's values, and that's why they got elected and why people voted for them. But you have to look at the whole picture. There are people right now, 9:20 on Monday morning, who are in pain. And as I said before, if ever there was an incentive to even try, even behind the scenes, sit down and talk, it's that historical abuse inquiry. Because it's an absolute, we should be, it's a moral disgrace that the money is sitting there and these poor individuals who have been through enough pain and suffering are not getting compensated because Brokenshire has said he won't sign off. But why won't Brokenshire sign off on it? Why can't there be compromise on both sides?
Do you know what I'm going to do, actually? Because if the Secretary of State won't talk to you all on this programme, and I was
Secretary of State talked to GMB, Good Morning Britain last week, which I thought was totally ridiculous because I've yet to hear him talk to you.
Well, as I've told you all last week, there were about three or four different occasions when he was penciled in, do you know that phrase, to talk to you all, and then on every occasion it didn't happen. Every single occasion,
because
it
he doesn't
didn't
want to, because people like me will phone up and we'll lambast him with questions. And I Brokenshire to me, I'm no doubt the man's very intelligent, but he's not up to a job because people like me and other people between 9:30 and 10:30 would phone up and ask him questions that he would probably feel very uncomfortable answering.
But here, I'll tell you what we are going to do, and we'll do it after the show today. All right, I think we should start looking at the quality of life for James Brokenshire's constituents across the water and compare what the rest of you here in Northern Ireland are going to have under his watch. Because that's where we are now. He can spend some of this money if he chooses to do so. He can play hardball with some of these political parties if he chooses to do so.
Could I suggest one thing, please, before you cut me off? Do you know what I would like you to do? On behalf of all those victims of the historical abuse, bombard a Brokenshire and whoever you can with requests, put the pressure on them. Your show's great at putting pressure on. You over the years, you've proven that they're put the pressure on this place. Like we, immorally, people should hang our heads in shame here. I seen that man on last week, living in one room. Ada Duncan interviewed him, and it was heartbreaking. And his words were, Ada Duncan, that he regretted the day he ever walked into Banbridge Courthouse. That's real life. That's the effect it's having.
And I'm sure
if Broken Shore's constituents were going through there, well, they wouldn't go through that there because he would make sure that it was rectified as quickly as he possibly could.
Even I've even written to James Brokenshire requesting a meeting on behalf of the victims and survivors of the historical abuse inquiry, and I haven't heard a word back from him, not even an acknowledgement that he received my request.
But yet if you lived in his constituency and you were a local representative, I don't doubt for a second he would be duty bound to reply to you.
I think, and that caller is absolutely correct on this. It is morally outrageous that those people who were let down by the state in their childhood are being let down again. And
yeah.
I agree about Stephen Brokenshire, or James Brokenshire, and by all means do that sort of an audit. But let's not put all the blame on him, because the two large parties would love to have government by press release. They would love all the flack to be on James Brokenshire and everything that they want done when the public pressure gets too much on things like historical abuse or some of the most pressing cases. They'd love to just be able to fire off a press release and kick James Brokenshire on it. And I don't believe he's done his job effectively. He hasn't convened these talks properly. But really, the pressure should be on us, the elected MLAs, for all 108 of us for Northern Ireland to make these decisions.
Do you think your money should stop soon?
Well, obviously, I think we should be doing our job. Rather than saying yes, drop all our wages, get us back to work. And I completely
would it work though, Claire? Yeah, I know it's nearly facile, Claire, and I know it's too easy for people to say that cut your money. But if the money stopped, if there was no deal, do you think that would be effective?
Do you know what would happen? It would starve out the smaller parties, and I think in any objective measure, it's not the smaller parties that's the problem. Because I mean, like everybody, I've got a family to support, I've got a mortgage to pay. I would go back to you would go back to 2 years ago. I had a career. You would have to go back to that, and I don't. But the larger parties who have more resources, not all of it from the most open sources, could keep their people on board. And what you would have is a further polarisation where the people who are in the middle who aren't gun to your head on this would be starved out effectively. And if that's what people want, yeah, we'll get that. I completely understand the frustration that we're all being paid, but I don't think it would focus the right minds on what needs to be done.
0303 80 55 55. Curtis and Enniskillen. Morning, Curtis.
Hi, Stephen.
Go ahead.
Stephen, I think it's blatantly obvious from the outside looking in that the DUP don't want to go back into government. Like, this is the first time.
Well, they say they're ready, and they've been ready for months, and it's Sinn Féin stonewalling them with a list of demands.
Yeah, but look at it. Like, this is the first time, I think, ever that there's never been a unionist majority. This is the first time that the DUP have never been able to use the petition of concern by themselves, which leads me on to my a question that I have for the UUP. Obviously, the TV is going to give one signature for the petition of concern to block gay marriage. Are the UUP going to give the second one or more?
Steve Aiken?
This for us is very much a matter of conscience, and we haven't actually had the conversation where we are yet. But you know my position, Steve, and I've made my position abundantly clear. When the issue of marriage equality comes up in the Assembly, and it needs, well, first of all, we need an Assembly back up and running, I'll be voting for it. And there'll be other members of my party who'll be doing the same sort of thing.
What way will your leader vote?
It's up to my leader will be voting against it, but my leader will not be signing a petition of concern. I can tell you that right now.
He won't.
Hold on, Curtis.
So Steve Aiken, Robin Swan will not sign a petition of concern.
Robin Swan will not be signing a petition of concern.
So is that sort of a guarantee that gay marriage will go through now the next time, that it comes before the Assembly, if we get the Assembly back?
The point is
can I just get clarity around this, because it is important. Steve, are you saying no Ulster Unionist Party member will sign a petition of concern in the future?
No, at the moment, our position is very clear. It's a matter of conscience within our party. But I can assure you that Robin Swan will not be signing a petition of concern on this issue.
Can you assure me about is that a party policy?
It was Roy Beggs who said that he would, not Robin Swan.
I've just been very confused over the whole matter because, you know, I've been hearing different things from different UUP members, and I just don't trust the UUP on that matter, whether they will go ahead with the TUV and the DUP and block gay marriage. I just don't trust you. I just don't.
Margaret McCookin is joining us now. Good morning to you, Margaret.
Good morning, Stephen.
From Survivors and Victims of Institutional Abuse. What impact is it having on you and the victims, Margaret, this impasse at Stormont?
Stephen, I wish you would do a whole programme on us, and I've been intending to ask you to do that. We need the like of you. People listen to you. Mr Brokenshire would perhaps listen to you and the main parties.
Well, he won't listen to me. Listen, James, yeah. A nice guy. James was on the Five Live show with me on a number of occasions. He's just he's running away from this show.
Yeah, I think he's the wrong guy in place. We need your man Hayen back. He was the right person. You know, he got things done. He was approachable. I think Mr. Brokenshire's the wrong person in place here.
James Brokenshire's approachable.
I don't think he is.
He is.
You get it's like a blank talking to a robot, and he's recording and rehearsed his answers. I don't blame now Sinn Féin when they came out and said waffle, waffle, waffle. I can understand where they were coming from. I don't want to be rude in that, but we are getting nowhere with him. We thought he was the key. We know he is the key, Stephen, to start a redress board, albeit even an interim payment. But he is refusing. He just repeats and repeats. We want the devolved government. We want the institutions up and running. Meanwhile, while he keeps repeating that, our people are down. As you've seen, that gentleman spoke about him there, Jimmy Lappin. He's going to be put out of his house. He's only weeks to live. We've attended so many funerals, and this is happening week in and week out, while nobody even considers our plight. And it is taking its strain because we're being built up, and even by Peter Robinson this year in his statement, which was well received. You know, we thought that would be the breaker for it all. And no, then we're built up and then let down again. And in the mental health of all of our people are just at death's door and turning to drink and drugs and despair. And this is a reality. This is not almost costing lives. It's costing lives. And this is over decades and decades and decades. And who is listening?
Who is listening? I think that Margaret's making excellent points there. And one of the most heartbreaking moments I've had as an MLA was the very last debate that happened at Stormont before they brought the house down was on Justice Hart's report into the historical abuse inquiry. Now, we had the whole day to have open discussions about the impact and what was going to happen with the institutions coming down. We had an untimed debate, and it went on for hours and hours and hours, and then at 11:30 at night, after every one of the Savia groups had been sitting in the public gallery all day long, 11:30 at that night, did we get a timed debate where we were all given a few minutes to stand up and talk about that report coming out. And as soon as that debate was done, the house was brought down, and every one of those victims and survivors have been left in this state ever since.
Claire Hannah,
and I think that's a disgrace.
Claire Hannah, which of the demands that Sinn Féin has laid down do you think they should give up before they go into government? So let's go through them. Do you think they should give up their demand for an Irish Language Act?
You see, Sinn Féin have been framing this, and you're doing it for them, as a bit of a fallacy question, when did you stop beating your wife type thing, that anything you say, you're accepting their premise. But we know it's about getting the structure in place for that, because they've said that the past deals aren't honoured, even if the DUP say, and I don't think they're going to suddenly say that we now support gay marriage and we support an Irish Language Act. We won't be able to believe it until we can see it. So we need to get back into the Assembly. The key to all of this is unlocking the petition of concern.
So you do think...
Sorry, Stephen,
well, Claire, I want to be precise. So you do think that Sinn Féin should give up their current position, which is they will not go into government unless there's an Irish Language Act. They will not go into government unless there is equality for the LGBT community. You think Sinn Féin should stand down from those demands?
They'll stop doing their Twitter job for them. No, Stephen, I'm saying they should support our proposals to reform the petition of concern that means the DUP can't block them. If we say we're not going in until we have these bills, where are they coming from? They have to be legislated for. So I'm saying the petition of concern shouldn't be allowed to be wielded by the DUP to block things that have no impact on them. So if Sinn Féin and the DUP sign up to those proposals that I think centre-ground parties support, that means you can't on a whim use the petition of concern to block equality for LGBT people or block equality for Irish language speakers. That's how we open it up. But as I say, we know history has shown us that for 20 years, if one of the big blocs demands of the other, they're less likely to move. This unlocks it.
Kelly Armstrong,
I agree completely. The DUP need to acknowledge that they accept everybody's not
all
like them and we have rights, but don't do Sinn Féin's job for them.
Well, they're doing their job for them. Don't be starting that. It's a straight, question to you, isn't it? Do you think they should step down? And we've heard a lot of words there from you this morning. Step down from their decision. They will not go into government unless they get them. That's leverage. That's a hard negotiating point. There might not be an assembly as a consequence, but you won't tell them,
you won't say out loud whether they should step down or not. Stephen, I'm
from their position.
Like, do you think there's any scenario where Arlene Foster's going to come out tomorrow and say, we now support equal marriage and we now support a standalone Irish Language Act? But if Sinn Féin, will you ask Sinn Féin when you have them on, will they support those proposals to allow the petition of concern to be reformed, and that's to allow day one? And let's not forget that our party tried to legislate on both of these things and Sinn Féin wouldn't.
OK, we've got to go to the news in 1 minute here. Kelly Armstrong from the Alliance Party joining us now. Morning to you, Kelly.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Do you think Sinn Féin, or indeed the DUP, should meet in the middle, should give up some of their positions that they've backed themselves into?
They have backed themselves into a corner, and we've actually been providing them with some ways of coming out of those corners. My colleague Paula Bradshaw has put forward an alternative paper on the Irish Language Act so that we can encourage DUP to see it as something that is not threatening to them, and that's what we've been working on all summer. We've been working extremely hard because for us, Northern Ireland is more important than the bickering that has been happening. I'm quite disappointed that Sinn Féin has said they want to come back on the 28th of August. We could have been doing this all summer. Why not this week? Why did we have a break? We've been engaging with stakeholders. All of the other smaller parties have been getting together, have been doing bilaterals. It's a little cynical at this stage to now call on talks to be reformed. We've been looking for this all summer. I don't think that either parties have any way forward if they keep staying in their corners. They need to come forward and they need to talk to us. And I think they need to be including smaller parties like us in the discussions about things like the Irish language and same-sex marriage and so on, so we can give them alternatives.
Kelly, Claire and Steve, thank you very much.